out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 16th of January, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Tuesday, I'm joined by the one and only Nat Danelaw. Nat, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. Just lifted some weights and ate some pizza and drank some milk. I'm feeling pretty good. Thank you very much for asking, Sir Longshanks.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I have three espressos a day, which... gets me going, gets me moving and inspired. And just before we go into what we're going to talk about today, I just thought I'd mention something. Last week we talked about paywalls, and a lot of people said that was really good, and some others criticized it and said, this is really bad. You shouldn't be talking about that. Some of us have to make money, and you know, I'm thinking, well, this is propaganda that we're putting out there. We want people to hear about it. And I heard yesterday that Tommy Robinson, who is a civic nationalist, he's a kosher nationalist from Britain, and he works for Ezra Levant, and he's just taken down his paywall. He said it's immoral to have a paywall because the message he has is so important. He wants it to reach as many people as possible. And he can't stand the fact that it's hidden behind a paywall and only 1,000 or so people were viewing it when he wants to reach millions. And I just thought that shows, even though I disagree with some of what he says, he has more integrity than some I could mention on the alt-right. And I just think that puts them to shame.
I think what is to be taken note of with this guy probably decided to get a job and provide for his own needs of production rather than demand other people to pay for his means of production of propaganda. Now, that is what you call having, you know, a small amount of integrity.
Well, he also says that he's still saying he needs donations to keep it going, but he's saying it's just a donation, not forcing people to pay it, to listen to it, saying we still need to cover, you know, we've still got costs to cover. This is the same as what we do at Radio Erin. We say we've still got costs to cover, but we're not going to force people to pay to listen to propaganda that we want people to listen to.
I mean, I think the big difference here is that we don't create conferences where you get drunk. I think that's the big difference.
Well, yeah, I guess conferences could cost a lot of money. I guess you have got overhead costs, but just with podcasting, I know there are a lot of our listeners, they're not rich, they're at the bottom of society, they're working class, and to charge them extra money when they can't afford it, I just think is wrong. It's fine for the people that can afford it to send donations, but to say we're going to treat everybody like a customer when they're our listeners, I think is wrong. Anyway, we covered this the other week. I just thought I'd mention it, that this civic nationalist is putting some others, ethno-nationalists, to shame. But I know you wanted to talk particularly about human rights and the importance of duty this week, Nat, which I think is quite a timely subject. So why don't you let the listeners know what's been on your mind?
So... this might surprise quite a few people, but I have a major interest in reading white power literature. So speaking of that, I started diving into George Lincoln Rockwell's fantastic book called White Power. And he mentioned that Negroes demand rights while not wanting to live up to the phenomenon known as duty. Now, this was a very short line. And as I heard it, I started thinking, because I'm kind of autistic like that, I started thinking about what duty entails and the very metaphysics of what duty is. Now, according to nature, nature has rewards those who live up to duty. Now, let's try and explain this. The first line of duty in the lines of a man's existence is family. The family is the first line aware of which he is obligated by duty to provide and protect. Now, second to the family comes the tribe, further on the race and the nation. Now, this is dictated by nature. When you look into the wilds of nature, you will see how animals stay loyal to their offspring. They protect it. They nurture it. They bring welfare upon it. Same goes for mankind's condition. Men are obligated by the very fundamentals of nature to nurture their own. Now, with nurturing, and let me try and go even further than this. For you to have civilization, you must live up to the dictations of nature. Nature dictates a high amount of duty and obligation for there to even be such a phenomenon as order. Now, with order comes, of course, right. Well, let's dive into what the duty of a man is, a man of Aryan stock. The man's duty is, well, the social contract of civilization was built as such. Men decided to band together and die against other tribes for the mere purpose of that they would be ensured a potential to, one, have a solid food income, and two, have women to provide them with offspring. Now, this means that duty is setting aside what you might call momentary pleasure, hedonism. Duty is separating man. Civilization occurs only when man is acting with standard, with ideal, with aiming for something higher, aiming like a human, a man created in God's image. Now, if a man doesn't act according to that, he's a beast. He becomes a slave to his own, what can you call it, animalistic drive. Hedonism is the beast in man. Duty is what creates man. Now, when a man takes on the shield of duty and protects civilization, he becomes what he is. He's a man. So, with that being said, let's see. Yes. So the reward from nature's side in terms of duty for a man to put down his life for his race and nation and tribe is, of course, as I said earlier, the right of procreation. Nature rewards those who remain dutiful.
Self-sacrifice, isn't it? That's what you mean there by the duty. Yes. It's a self-sacrifice for the tribe. And I would suggest that the idea of rights doesn't come naturally. What should come naturally is the idea of duty. We're all brought up. We're brought up and we're completely helpless. And our parents provide everything for us. They provide our food for us. They provide our warmth for us. And what they use for doing this, they use tools and technology. And that's all been provided by the people that went before. The innovation and the inspiration for those tools and everything that we see around us may have come over thousands of years of working on these particular items that man needs. So we're not an island. All of that has been provided by the people before us, right down to mother's milk has been provided by somebody else. So what you should be thinking is, all this has been provided for me. What is, I must now have a sense of duty. It is my duty to pay back all those people that went before me, all the people that invented those things, my parents. And how do you pay them back? You pay your family back by, or your parents back and your grandparents back. You pay them back by producing more children, and you pay all the ancestors back by ensuring that everything is provided for your descendants. And if you don't have descendants, you make sure that everything is provided for the other descendants of the other members of your race and in your tribe. This isn't exclusive if you've got children. You should feel this sense of duty and wanting to do what's right by your people anyway, just because of everything that has been provided by them for us, but by our ancestors. And then when you look at the foreigners that come here, they have none of that. It's all just take. What they are taking are the results of thousands of years worth of technology and self-sacrifice by the white man, self-sacrificing to save all this up and to create all these innovations and inventions that we have. And then the traitors in our government invite the foreigners over and say, it's your right to take all of that. And they don't have any duties. They don't have any duties written out in a constitution or in the law. And they don't have any instinct that they should actually have any duties, because what they see around them, none of it's come from their ancestors. It's all just booty to them, I would suggest.
Francis Bacon once wrote that for nature to be commanded, it must be obeyed. Existence brings forth grand obligations, and as a biological organism, you can never run away from the very mechanisms of nature that makes demands of you. Existence is struggle. Now, understand me correct. When we talk about rights, rights only comes to those who are victorious. Let me try and bring forth an example. Take the farmer. The farmer is plowing his fields for a whole year, sowing seeds, putting a lot of labor into growing crops. When the season is right, all the crops start to prosper and spring out and, you know, be ready for harvest. He harvests it. He has the right of harvesting this because he lived up to his obligations, his duty to maintain that field. And as such, he gets the natural right to harvest it. Now, everything in nature dictates, you know, there is a certain set of playing rules according to the laws of nature on how biological organisms exist and how they thrive. And for a species to be successful, it must have loyalty as well as a sense of duty, as we talked about earlier, to what they are. Now, you talked earlier about the foreigners coming in. You know, and they don't have a sense of duty or obligation towards the society, this giant free-for-all table that they're coming to, where they can take whatever they want without question, without any sort of demands of them. They will come forth and take that. But it makes sense, really. What they see is all other biological organisms in this world. I'm sure the hyena thus isn't thankful to the lion for having slain a prey when it's trying to steal it, which has been seen time and time again in nature documentaries. We see the hyenas try to steal away prey from lions. The hyenas never show gratitude. Neither will you see the Negro show gratitude to the Aryan man for having created civilization from where of which he leeches off and grows and prospers. So, when that is being said, it is very natural that the foreigner shows no duty, has no sense of duty, nor any obligations or thankfulness to us as a host people. Because to them, what they see is a weakened people. It's like the sickly lion. They can easily take away our prey, the fruits of our labor. So, with that being said, let's talk about the phenomenon known as human rights. Human rights is inherently an egalitarian idea. It goes out from the position that all men are created equal, completely denying the prospects of thousands upon thousands of years of evolution. The very fundamentals of DNA is being rejected with this swift idea. So when that is being said, that all men is equal, that means that all actions are equal. That means that all actions of labor are equal. That also means that all sense of belonging should be distributed, it says. So, human rights is inherently false. It's a false premise. It does not take into consideration that we are different organisms. A people is an organism.
We have different how values can you
make,
as well.
How I can think. You make collective rights to different organisms? You can't. just like in nature. Certain laws of nature does not apply to some species and races. It's all different conditions.
The only way we could all be equal is when you're comparing one group to another group. Because when you've just got the group on its own, like say you've got all the people in Britain, you've got all the Saxons in Britain, and they had a system called Wergild, which meant that if somebody was killed, depending on their position in society and the value that that position held in society was the value that that death would cost. So you had a value was placed on these different castes because some people are worth more than others, are more important than others. Although we need every caste for a nation to function, some people are worth more than others, scientists and intellectuals, because they are at the very top. The tiniest percentage of the nation are actually like that. So when you look at the nation like that, you say, well, everybody is unequal. But then if you were to compare the whole British nation to Negroes, you would say all the white men are equal. They are equal together when they are held up against the Negro. But that's the only time that you can say that all men are created equal is if you're saying all white men are created equal or all black men are created equal. It's only when you've got something else that you can hold it against that you can actually say that, I think. And another thing that comes into this, when we made human rights, or when the French came out with human rights and they said all men are equal and they all have these equal rights, they emancipated the Jew. And up until then, the Jew was not allowed to employ Christians. He was not allowed to marry Christians. He's not allowed to lend money to them, but they got around that law. But as soon as human rights came in and said that Jews could be treated the same way as everybody else, that was it. They were able to become members of parliament. They were able to own these big factories outright and own the Christians that were working for them and interbreed with the Christians as well. Because these laws that separated the Jews from whites go right the way back to the 4th century and Constantine the Great, who was really thinking ahead and saying, we cannot have Christians working for Jews because they will corrupt and seduce the Christians. And that lasted, those laws really did last right up until the French Revolution. And then they brought in human rights and suddenly the Jew was the same as the white man. And he's going to take advantage of that. And then they also brought in democracy and we could put anybody we wanted could be in charge and we'd have the rule of the mob instead of the rule of the elite, the people that had been bred for that purpose. Eugenics came into it as well. It got rid of all of that. It was more than a retrograde step. It was an attack on the white race itself, I think, Nat.
It was, definitely. I agree. And now here's something I think, you know, that I really think that human rights does not take into consideration. Remember when I said that rights is granted to the victor?
Yes.
You know, maybe you can't make a global sense of what is righteous when some people deserve the condition they're in. Look at Haiti. Maybe there's a reason why they're in that horrible situation they're in where they eat mud cakes. Maybe there's a reason for that. Because they don't want to plow the fields. Maybe it's because they don't want to deal with agriculture. Maybe there's a reason why they're starving. And that is the thing. They get what they deserve. That is the fundamental law of nature. That law, that nature punishes those who are slothful, weak, hedonistic. They deserve to starve. And in accordance with the natural balance of nature, and I think Thomas Malthus, the 18th century mathematician who did a lot of studies on demographic growth, he had the right idea. That nature will always find a way to correct itself. That, he said, as a population grows drastically, it is very natural for that population at some point to decline due to the fact that, you know, the genetic quality will fall and how they will not have the agricultural means to provide food for them all. And as conflict will arise, they will, through natural causes, decline. And I think with that in mind, if Africa ever was to get into a good position again, now keep in mind, when we're talking about Europe is made upon thousands of years of conflict, plague, and blood spill. Our borders are pretty much entrenched in thousands upon thousands of leaders of our ancestors who gave away their lives for the tribe. And for Africa ever to get to such a point, they need one to purge out their own gene pool and see who will remain victorious. Now, the European peoples have withstood the trials of time and conflict. We have proved a right of existence through the very fact that we have fought against the most superior peoples in the world. We withstood the Ottoman Empire, the Mongolians. We withstood each other for thousands of years. I mean, even England survived the wrath of the Danes, even though you got a bit of Dane law there.
Yeah.
But with that being said, we have, in the eyes of nature, proved ourselves worthy of existence. And now we have people who deny the premises of nature. And as such, it gets perverse. It gets warped. And as such, we will see this disbalance, this continuous decline of civilizational status. And with that being said, human rights is 100%, as you said, with the emancipation of the Juden. Yes, it will continue. Unless we get back on the track of understanding what is right, and we need to understand the metaphysics of duty.
Well, it's turned tradition on its head as well. I mean, the Enlightenment ideals, they just threw away the church, they threw away the monarchy, they threw away everything to do with class and caste and hierarchical distinctions. They got rid of all authority and had anarchy for a while, and then thought, well, this is a great thing. And we've been told that it's a great, wonderful thing since then, and we must export it all around the rest of the world. We must export democracy, human rights, Enlightenment values. They're all so wonderful. And everywhere you look in the world, it's brought nothing but pain and suffering. If you look at Africa, what did it bring to Africa? Well, a sudden explosion in the birth rate. None of them are capable of looking after themselves. They all require food aid of some sort. When they don't get the food aid, then their IQ suffers even worse than it normally is, with the average of 75. Goes down to 60 or 65, and they become completely useless. Nature tries to correct the balance, tries to set things right, comes out with diseases, and then the silly white man spends all his money trying to develop antidotes to these diseases and sending over his own people over to Africa to help them out at great risk of bringing the disease back to our own countries. Every time we try to interfere, we end up causing this same mess.
It's arrogance. It's the arrogance of humanism. Humanism is the very systematic rejection of nature. They reject the complete premises of what nature is. Now, with that being said, back in the day, during the early stages of colonialism, the white man made the ginormous mistake of thinking that they were above the premises of nature. That if you introduced a Negro to factory work, agriculture, and infrastructure, they would naturally learn how to act white. That the white man's magical fairy dust would somehow, you know, go off on us and rub on the black, and the black man would act civilized. Now, this was, of course, a major mistake, because once again, they've rejected nature. They've rejected the premise of evolution. So, you are correct. Nowadays, we see how humanism is the new world dogma, where they continuously reject nature. And it's arrogant. It's arrogant. Almost like, you know, walking over to a guy and saying, yeah, gravity, that's not real, mate. It's just a social construct. It's just a theory, bro. Don't take it so seriously.
They have really just, they've taken God out of the equation and said that we can make our own laws. We were given laws. We can see, look around us and we can see the actual laws of nature. We can see that everything is built on these hierarchies. We can see that nothing is given away for free. And you mentioned there that our lands are drenched in the blood of our ancestors. And that was how they secured these lands. That was how they got them for us in the first place. The land was drenched in the blood of our ancestors, and that's how we paid for these rights. That's how we defended, we made sure that our countries were safe and protected from the invaders so that our civilizations could grow, so that we could, that's how we developed our entire civilization, was through securing the land first and foremost. And now that we've given these rights to the whole world, our countries have become flooded with them, and they're now taking everything away from us, and there's no possibility for us to advance in civilization anymore if it doesn't stop.
You're right. But here's the thing. Arrogance is the key word here. What the modern day has brought us in terms of thinking is the pure rejection of what you can call nature. Now, they think, the humanitarian, the humanist, he will say that we don't need to think in such archaic terms anymore. Survival is no longer important. All senses of duty and loyalty, that's archaic. That's something from the 20th century. That's so old. You know, and it's like this continuous arrogance that just plain out rejects what existence is about. It rejects the premise of struggling for your existence. It is the lean back, effeminate attitude that everything will be okay. Don't worry about it. Don't think about the conditions of biology. It does not apply to you. You're above that. You know, it's almost like putting them up on the pedestal of a demigod, essentially. It's quite disgusting, really, and it's sincerely hyper arrogant.
Well, I will say that the struggle, we've never had a struggle quite like the struggle that we have got now, and that the people that we've got now in resisting all of this and in fighting against all of this, we are turning ourselves into the greatest characters, I believe, that will have ever lived. I mean, look at the odds. Look at what we're fighting against. It's incredible. And you think that all the ancestors that went before us, and every one of them ensured that they didn't miscegenate, they didn't breed with a non-white. Every one of them had a white partner. And we are the product, living in the time that we are living in now, with this war that we're in the middle of, where our enemy has got just hold of just about everything, and yet still we are managing to fight back. Still we've got a voice on the internet. Still we know what is right, and we're speaking about what is right. We're shouting about what is right, and we're making sure that people know that there are still people out there that are doing what is right. I have to say, at least give us something positive to think about, and that you know, it has to be the most positive thing that there is. And if we can beat this, we're better than everyone else that came before.
Without the elements of resistance, without the elements of wind, a flag would never show its beauty. And the harder the system struggles against our cause, essentially, the more clear the symbol of our victory shall appear. And because they struggle harder, we will continue even harder forwards. It is truly a privilege in a way that we get to live in an age where we can see either the fall or the ultimate victory of the Aryan man. The last chapter of the book, if you will.
And it comes down to us. And if we beat them, we'll be greater than we have ever been before. Nat, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Florian Geyer. So I'll say God bless and hail victory.